Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
Rise! Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America at this moment.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents CAF Chats. I'm Lieutenant Colonel David Seagraves, United States Marine Corps, and with me I have...
Major Dustin Morgan. We have a special guest today. Why don't you introduce yourself, too?
I'm Caitlin Harder. I'm a rising 2L at the University of Virginia School of Law.
So this feels a little bit better, where we're back to our normal roles in this podcast. So what are we talking about today?
Today we're going to talk about United States versus Airman First Class Christopher Cole, United States Air Force. It was argued on December 6, 2023, and decided on June 6, 2024. So, Caitlin, why don't you tell us some of the facts about this case?
Sure, sir. So, this is what we got. In June of 2021, Airman First Class Christopher D. Cole was convicted of one specification of each: assault via strangulation on diverse occasions, simple assault with an unloaded firearm, and assault consummated by battery. The appeal centered around an error made by the military judge at trial in identifying Specification 2 of Charge 2, the simple assault with an unloaded firearm. Airman Cole was charged with a simple assault with an unloaded firearm after he held an unloaded 9mm Smith & Wesson pistol to the temple of Airman R.L. in his apartment after she refused to continue reassembling his rifle. Prior to the incident, he had removed the firing pin from the pistol, but nonetheless, he told others that he pulled the trigger when he held the pistol to her temple in order to put pressure on her and make her go faster. During a Providence inquiry at trial, the military judge purported to explain the elements of the simple assault alleged in Specification 2 of Charge 2. But in doing so, he referred to the offense as an assault consummated by battery and then proceeded to instruct on the elements of an aggravated assault with a dangerous weapon.
Yeah, I want to stop there for a second and kind of like hit on this difference a little bit. So it's super fascinating what happened here. So we had a charge on the charge sheet and a specification that talked about assault with an unloaded firearm because the firing pin wasn't in it. So unloaded, incapable of firing. And then you had some confusion about what happened. So you have some elements being given, because remember during guilty pleas, if you've listened to other episodes, the accused has to be told exactly what they're pleading guilty to, has to have the elements explained to them, and then has to admit why they meet each of those elements, why they're guilty of each of those elements. Again, all the way back to the 1960s for a case, United States versus Kerr, that's been codified into our rules since then. Those are three fundamentally different crimes. The charge sheet has assault with an unloaded firearm. He was given elements for an assault consummated by a battery, and on physical and unlawful touching, which we have no indication that that's what happened here, and then explained even further, aggravated assault, a dangerous weapon. A gun with a firing pin missing is really not a dangerous weapon. Sorry for the interruption, Caitlin, but I just wanted to kind of break that down further for the listeners because it's a little bit complicated but interesting.
It is. And also, Airman Cole acknowledged that he understood the elements and the definitions of the offenses as they were read to him by the military judge and admitted that they accurately described his conduct. And on top of that, no further inquiries were requested by the trial or defense counsels during this time either. So this was appealed to the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, who said that the military judge did err during the Providence inquiry by indicating that Airman Cole was charged with the offense of assault consummated by battery and conducting a colloquy on matters that were not part of the charged offense. But CCA said that the appellant had not met his burden to show a substantial basis to question his plea to Specification 2, not finding any evidence that the military judge considered extra aggravating factors during the sentencing. The CCA did not believe the errors made the military judge substantially influenced in the adjudged sentence.
Yeah, so no harm, no foul, the CCA at least. So they said no. It's not like the judge considered anything that was outside of what he was admitting to anyway. Okay, I mean, interesting, because you're being told about one offense and really you're being told about two offenses when you're pleading guilty to a whole separate offense. But they said you could come to the same result in sentencing anyways, potentially, so good to go. But that's not where it ended, right?
No, CAF did not agree. So CAF ruled that the error made by the military judge relating to his instruction on Specification 2 of Charge 2 did result in a material prejudice to a substantial right of the accused. CAF found that the military judge erred in advising Airman Cole that in pleading guilty to Specification 2, he was pleading guilty to an assault consummated by battery. He also erred in providing Cole with elements and definitions applicable to aggravated assault with a dangerous weapon, and then questioning him about these elements. As such, the military judge failed to correctly inform Airman Cole of the nature of the offense to which his plea was offered. He then sentenced Airman Cole based on these misapprehensions, which the CAF found to be materially prejudiced by Airman Cole's substantial right to be sentenced for the correct offense based on a consideration of the nature, circumstances, and seriousness of the offense.
Okay, so sir, we got kind of a mess here with the Providence inquiry.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. The military judge actually has a lot more work to do than you would think with a guilty plea. And so basically when you start a guilty plea, Caitlin, some things happen. The trial counsel comes up, and this is kind of interesting. They normally talk about the general nature of the charges. Mm-hmm. And so one might think that just right there, this might have been avoided if they, very specifically said what the charges were. They'll talk about, a convening order, how the court was formed. But then it's pretty much the military judge to show. And as Justin said, has to inform, the accused of all their rights, goes over the rights to counsel, goes over all the rights in the plea agreement, and then, as said before, we'll have to go through all the elements of all the charges and specifications and do that providency inquiry. And so not only do they have them, ask them, if they agree and they understand all the elements, but then we'll actually start asking them, specific questions. Okay, tell me in your own words how you committed these offenses. As we discussed, we kind of have three different charges. Pulled up the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals opinion, because I was curious what the specification said. And the specification was, in that Airman First Class Christopher D. Cole, United States Air Force, 355th Aircraft Maintenance Squadron, Davis-Monthan Air Base, Arizona, did within the state of Arizona, between on or about 1 September 2019 and on or about 28 September 2019, assault the victim by pointing an unloaded firearm at her head.
Yeah, I think, so for those of you that don't know, in our practice, when you're drafting a specification like that, you're starting from a core principle resource. So every service uses what we call the Electronic Military Judge's Bench Book. Great resource. It has all the elements of the offense, and it has a model specification that's contained on that website that each independent judiciary keeps and maintains. And it's up to date. I mean, they're constantly looking at what CAF and the Courts of Criminal Appeals are doing, and they're making sure that those model specifications align. So it's pretty obvious reading that specification that is an assault with an unloaded firearm. You can tell by thereby did assault and thereby did so with an unloaded firearm, two of the requisite elements that are required for that type of offense. It's interesting how this kind of all fell apart after that, though. And the court does a pretty good job addressing that. So they start with the fundamental principle that they're always dealing with. So what's the standard of review here? And you have to think, if you've listened to other things before, there's a difference between preserved and unpreserved error. And you always have to be concerned at that, because maybe you're in waiver land if you're not careful and you're not preserving something that you have to statutorily or by the rules preserve, or else it's just waived. Luckily for the appellant in this case, for Airman Cole, he was not in waiver land. But because his counsel didn't object during the Providence inquiry, he's in forfeiture land. So as with forfeiture, we know from previous episodes and from previous cases, you have a higher burden to show here, mainly that the error was clear and obvious and that your substantial right of the accused was materially prejudiced. So showing those two things in appeal can be difficult in some circumstances, and that may explain a little bit why the CCA did not overturn his conviction on first review. So then they go through and they determine, is this plain and obvious error? And they say yes. I mean, one, because of how clear the specification is in saying unloaded firearm, and two, because those elements are just fundamentally different. They're talking about two or maybe arguably three just fundamentally different crimes here. And they say that's pretty plainly obvious to any practitioner practicing in this criminal law, military justice realm. So because of that, they go next to prejudice. And again, pretty easy to determine if you're not advised of what the crime is that you're pleading guilty to. There's a obvious way to examine that. Like, do you truly understand the nature of what you're pleading guilty to? If not, you just can't plead guilty in our system. Bottom line, you have to tell the judge that you not only understand what you're being charged with, but you have to be able to explain to him or her why you're guilty. And you can't do that if you're advised of the wrong crime. So just an interesting way to get here for that. Interesting way to think about what the obligation of each of these parties are when there's a guilty plea going on. And a good example how you have to be on your game even in a guilty plea in the military justice system. Think I missed anything on that, sir?
No. I mean, it's pretty much straight up what happened. And I said, normally the military judge is presumed to know the law and apply it correctly. But here we have evidence on the record that mistakes were made. And so since we don't know that he was sentenced for the right crime, there's definitely questions about that. The safest way to preserve his rights is just to resentence.
Yeah, just go back and do it again. He'll have to plead guilty again if he so chooses to. I mean, that's his right, obviously. But they'll have to make sure that he completely understands the nature of the offense to which he's pleading guilty.
There's some questions about, you know, the unloaded firearm even being a dangerous weapon. You know, he agreed to it,
right.
But there's a question of whether it really was.
Yeah, I mean, if you look in the bench book and you look in the definitions of what dangerous weapon is, it says by its nature and use becomes a dangerous weapon. Like, I think that that's a legitimate question. If by its nature, a gun with a firing pin missing is a dangerous weapon. I mean, it's a good argument unless you're using it like a club. Probably not, because it can't fire and do the job for which it was made. So we'll have to see how they resort that out on remand if they choose to do so.
So we have segmented sentencing in courts martial currently. And so from the sentence, we saw that, you know, of the three specifications, two of them got maxed out of the 6 months that were allowed for the deal, and then we had 2 months on the third one. And this one in question was one of the specifications where they maxed out his confinement per the deal for 6 months. And so part of the question is, okay, how do we know if he wasn't sentenced for the aggravated assault? Because, again, the questions were asked about it versus the simple assault with an unloaded firearm. And since we don't know, as I said, go back and do it again.
Yeah, because they are fundamentally different crimes by their nature. Just thinking about it logically, they're just different, because you have something that's incapable of inflicting death, really, or you have something that's not. And that's a pretty different set of offenses when you go back and think about it.
So, Dustin, I think now we come to the part where we always ask, how does this help, or how can the fleet or the field use this case?
I think this is a great case that shows what you have to do to prep for a guilty plea by all three parties. So trial counsel, defense counsel, military judge, the takeaway is the same for all three of them. That's to start with the bench book. You need to make sure that you understand the nature of what the accused is pleading guilty to. The only way to really go and do that is look at the charge sheet, make sure you have the right charge and specification, make sure that you understand what the elements of the offense are. And then for those of you that are trial counsel and defense counsel, hold the judge to those actual elements and make sure that they're meeting all of them. I know in the Army, at least the practice is for the judge after they're done to look at both counsel and say, do you believe any further inquiry is required, counsel? It is okay to get up and say, yes, Your Honor, I do. Specifically, I think you need to ask more questions about this element. Or in a case like this, if you fundamentally think that the judge is advising on the wrong type of crime, to stand up and say, Your Honor, the government and the defense are having a different understanding of what the accused is pleading guilty to. This is what we think the accused is pleading guilty to, and clarify that before going forward. Because ultimately, if you don't do that, you find yourself in a position like this where you're just borrowing the conviction for a little bit, and then you have to go back and do it all over again. That's not a great position to be in.
So, Caitlin, as I said, all three individuals, all three parties, defense, the trial counsel, the military judge, all have a role here. So many times, you know, when you get to a guilty plea, if you're a trial counsel, you almost do a little bit of victory dance. Okay, we got it. We're going to get this plea. I have to about a page worth of script to read, and I can kind of sit back. But you really can't. You know, you still need to have that conviction and make sure it is sustained. So if you hear something different, something weird, like dangerous weapon, wait a second. You know, ask for that recess. Ask for the 39A, well, you're already in a 39A session, but just ask the question. There's nothing wrong with asking that question. Your Honor, why are you advising on this? Same thing with defense. I mean, you know, Dustin and I have both been defense counsel, and part of the, you know, getting ready for a guilty plea, you pretty much built the guilty plea script yourself. Again, we all use the electronic bench book. So, you know, part of our job as defense counsel is making sure they, our client understands the elements beforehand, that they can, plead guilty providently, and they actually did the crime. So again, making sure you're prepared as well there. And don't get me wrong, the plea agreement seems like a pretty decent deal. And so as a defense counsel, you really want to help your guy get across the finish line and get the benefit of that bargain. But you have to make sure it's done right. And for the military judge, should anyone go be assuming the bench anywhere, I think that person, me, would make sure to ask those questions as well. There can be some pride issues where, okay, I'm going to be senior to those people most likely. But still, there's nothing wrong with asking some questions, making sure that we're all on the same page.
Yeah, so interesting case. Good lessons for the field. Before we go, Caitlin, why don't you tell us a little bit what you're doing here this summer with us?
Sure, sir. So I'm an extern here at the schoolhouse. Like I said, I'm from Virginia Law, so I'm just right next door. I'm an ed delay, so I did my undergrad at Berkeley, and when I went to go branch into the Army, I submitted a packet for ed delay, and I got it. And around the same time, I also got a binding decision to Virginia Law, so I was committed here well before I even knew what I was getting myself into.
Yeah, so why don't you explain the ed delay program a little bit more in case we have any ROTC cadets listening? There's got to be one or two of you, right?
Of course. So I did 4 years ROTC, Army ROTC at Berkeley. Went to advanced camp, did the entire process. Instead of branching with the rest of the other cadets, my other MS4s, I submitted a packet for ed delay, was accepted. And so now I'm doing 3 years over at Virginia Law, and then I'll eventually apply to be in the JAG Corps and hopefully be taken in. And if not, I'll be somewhere in the Army. So I'll be back in 3 years.
Well, you've got two allies here. Well, I mean, I know you're a Marine, sir, but I mean, it's too late. She's already joined the Army.
Sorry. You got school paid for. That's awesome. You're going to be a great member of the team. You've already been great as part of the department.
Thank you, sir.
Having you here. I'm excited for you.
Thank you, sir.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, one last thing before we go. Sir, this is our last podcast together. I know James tried to say goodbye to you, but I feel like as the person who has the most hours on this show with you, I think that I get the right to do that.
I mean, it's kind of like Michael Corleone said in Godfather 3, just when I thought I was out, Dustin pulls me back in.
I had to explain a lot to you one more time. I think it's only fair.
I've truly enjoyed it, Dustin. I really appreciate all the effort you put in here, all the editing, and the dedication you have towards keeping this podcast going. I'm happy it's in good hands, man.
I can't wait to read what you do on the bench, sir. Maybe we'll be talking about you here shortly.
Hopefully not. Hopefully all my are summarily just approved. But I'm sure you'll be able to make fun of me some more.
Well, thank you, listeners, once again. And we'll be signing off until next time. Please remember to subscribe and rate us 5 stars. And this ends another episode of CAF Chats. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.